Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of Real Talks. I'd like to welcome a special guest to the podcast today. He's originally from Wisconsin, but resides in Sin City. He attended the University of Wisconsin, eventually getting his bachelor's degree in history. He then went on to Tulane University Law School, but eventually went to pursue his passion, which was poker. He began working in the industry as an intern for Bluff Magazine at the 2009 WSOP. The following year, he worked the World Series of Poker for Poker News. In October of 2010, joined him full-time as a senior writer. In addition to writing daily articles, he participates in the Poker News podcast and is part of the live reporting team where he serves as the site's managing editor. But not only is he an accomplished writer, he's a great poker player to boot. In 2013, he won a $1,500 buy-in event, getting his first WSOP bracelet, earning him over $80,000. To date, he has 16 cashes at the WSOP, including this year. His career earnings total over $132,000. When he's not playing poker or writing about it, he's enjoying comic books, hiking, and kayaking. I'd like to welcome Mr. Chad Holloway to Real Talks. How are you doing, Chad?
I am doing well. Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to chat with you.
Fantastic. And where can they find you and your work?
Well, they can find it, as you said, on Poker News is pretty much where it's all at. I wear many hats there, the podcast, doing articles and things like that. So definitely encourage people to check that out, give it a listen on the Poker News podcast. And then I'm also very active on social media. So anybody who wants to follow me on Instagram, it's disco_Chad, which is my online screen name. And then on Twitter, Chad A. Holloway.
Fantastic. So where did you get this passion for poker?
Yeah, me and poker go way back. It's to the point where I don't actually remember where I first learned the game of poker. I just know as a kid, I was introduced to games at a very young age. What I do remember about poker is when we were young, probably about 10 years old, me and some friends during the summer months would go to the only restaurant in town. It was a little Americana cafe. I grew up in a town of about 500 people, and we would play poker, five-card draw at the time, for French fries. We would order a plate of French fries each, came to $1.26, I'll never forget, and they would give us a big serving because they knew that's what we were there to do, was to eat these French fries, but also play with them and bet them. And I have a picture of that with me and three friends in a booth playing. That's my earliest memory of poker. And then from there, just graduated to, you know, French fries into baseball cards, maybe video games, and then quarters once we started, you know, earning some money and when we became working age. And I just kept up with it. I had lots of friends who kind of fell by the wayside, if you will, when life interrupted. But I just loved poker so much that I continued on with it, eventually playing in casinos and then eventually turning it into a career. You know, and I do play still quite a bit, but it's not my sole source of income. As you said, you know, I transitioned into the poker media side of things a little bit more. But it's been a part of my life as long as I can remember and is one of the biggest, if not the biggest part of my life right now.
So what actually got you into writing?
Writing is the interesting part because we say at Poker News, you know, there's two types of people. There are people who are writers first and then learn poker, which is a lot harder to do. Whereas you can be a player or a poker person first and learn how to write about it, which seems to be a little bit easier. I fortunately had a little bit of both. I was never trained, you know, in journalism, but I did go, as you mentioned, to the University of Wisconsin, where I majored in history and then on to law school. And I don't know what it was with writing. I've always had a knack for it. It's something I probably have taken for granted that it's just come naturally to me. And when I was in law school, I managed to write my way onto a newsletter, which was very rare for a 1L law student to write their way onto any sort of the newsletters in a particular law school. But I did. And then when I ended up dropping out, I decided to see if I could use that little bit of an experience, that little bit of a writing resume, if you will, to try to find some poker opportunities. And unfortunately, I did. Was offered the opportunity to write for a small online website, to do some free magazine articles, and just slowly built up the experience and a resume, which ultimately led to, you know, 2009 was an internship with Bluff Magazine at the World Series of Poker, and then the following year, opportunity with Poker News, which, you know, went very well because I'm still doing it to this day, more than a decade later.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I remember reading an article in Bluff Magazine many, many, many years ago. And they talked about how some of the greatest players actually ended up finishing, you know, they didn't end up winning the world. They didn't end up winning the main event. You take a look at some people like, you know, Jesus Ferguson and others who made the final table, you know, Phil Ivey, Daniel Negreanu, some others, and they've made millions of dollars and they've had longevity. Where you take a look at some of the winners of the World Series Poker. I mean, I know for reading about it, like Chris Moneymaker, you know, he was a gambler and he used his last $500 to buy into a satellite, and he ended up winning that, getting the actual seat, winning the whole thing. And of course, this is why we have the Moneymaker effect, and because it doubled from almost 500 to 1,000 the next year. And then, you know, like Peter Eastgate too. I mean, he won almost $8 million when he won. And then he ended up quitting for about a year or two after, you know, and then he came back and he's playing today. But it's like, it's amazing. So anyways, long story short, I ended up reading Bluff many years ago, and that was helpful. So who were some of your influences as far as poker players growing up?
Yeah, I certainly did. You know, Moneymaker was a big one, like so many others. I was a product of the poker boom. I actually was the year before that, to be honest, that I kind of got into it more. I remember my cousin, who also took poker seriously for a while there, he had recorded Robert Barconi's victory in the 2002 World Series on a VHS tape off of ESPN. And it was around that time where we had started watching Rounders for the first time. I know Rounders came out in 1998, but we didn't discover it until around 2002, kind of going into 2003. And between Rounders and that Robert Barconi final table, we pieced together what No Limit Hold'em was. Before that, we had been playing, you know, five-card draw and just made up games with wild cards and things like that. So we pieced together what No Limit Hold'em was and obviously got caught by that bug and started playing that. So Moneymaker, I would say, and Robert Barconi in an inadvertent way. But once I started getting into poker and following the industry, a big influence on me was the late, Devilfish Elliott, David Elliott, a poker Hall of Famer. He was on the many episodes of the World Poker Tour, WPT champion. And I just remember loving his character, his persona, wearing a suit with the slick back hair. And he had these knuckle dusters that said Devil and Fish. And he just was a smooth talker, quick-witted. And I just remember him being my favorite poker player. And it was surreal. I got to know him as I worked my way into the industry and before he passed away, to the point where, you know, we would exchange messages, have conversations and things like that. So he was definitely a big one, as was and still kind of is, Phil Hellmuth. So I am from Wisconsin, as Phil Hellmuth is. He was from Madison. I grew up about an hour north of Madison, so not too far. And we played with a lot of the same people and in a lot of the same places. So always kind of had that connection. And then again, as I have worked my way up in the poker industry, I would venture to say me and Phil are fairly close. You know, I can text him and get a response. I've been over when he's at here in Vegas, visiting over to his hotel room and giving him a ride from the Aria to the World Series of Poker at the Rio last year, which was pretty crazy. But yeah, and I've been to three or four of his latest bracelet victories. He's invited me to the after party, if you will, which is, again, surreal. But I think just that Wisconsin connection, Phil Hellmuth has always been high on my list as well.
So for all those that aren't too familiar, many, many years ago, the godfather of poker, I think everybody would agree, Doyle Brunson held the record at 16. And so in this last calendar year, Phil had been tied with him for many years. And so he ended up actually winning his record-breaking bracelet. So what do you think the biggest, besides that, what do you think the biggest difference is in the game between when Doyle played and today? Is it all about numbers, or are we just...
It's interesting, and not to correct you, Phil has 16 bracelets right now, which is the
record. Okay, thank you.
but for the longest time around the 2005 to 10 era thereabouts, we had a three-way tie between Doyle Brunson, Johnny Chan, and Phil Hellmuth. They were all tied at 10 bracelets, which was, you know, a joint record. Hellmuth has since went on to win six more, and then Doyle and Johnny are still stuck at 10 and tied at 10. Nobody else has, you know, got more than 10 other than Hellmuth. So I think it's twofold. I think, you know, obviously Doyle is in his late 80s. He's not putting in the volume that Phil Hellmuth does, who is in his, I think, mid-50s. So Hellmuth is still out there grinding the World Series of Poker events, putting in the volume, whereas Doyle Brunson isn't, Johnny Chan isn't, Phil Ivey really isn't. And, you know, maybe they're focusing their attention on cash games instead of tournaments and things like that. And also just the eras in which they played. So when Doyle was playing from the get-go in the 70s, into the 80s, even into the 90s, the bracelet didn't have the prestige that it does now. It really blew up, you know, during the poker boom era, but so they weren't necessarily chasing them. Yeah, it was a neat little trinket or trophy after they won in the past, but had they known the prestige and the legacy that would be attached to it later on, I'm sure they would have focused a little bit more on tournament play, because in the old days of the WSOP, the tournaments were just the side attraction. The players showed up at Binion's Horseshoe downtown to play the high stakes cash games. That's what really brought people in. And the tournaments were just something they could do on the side. And so I think that is a difference that kind of accounts for the less bracelets among Doyle Brunson in the older contingent, as opposed to, you know, you see Phil Hellmuth and others now. And then real quick, the other numbers, there's just a lot more events now. In 2022, I think there was 88 bracelet events just in Las Vegas. There's also going to be 15 at the World Series of Poker in Europe. There are also online events. So the opportunities to win bracelets in this day and age are a lot more bountiful than they were back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s.
Yeah. So let's talk about your bracelet. You are a former. So in 2013, it was 828. Don't quote me on the number. But it was around. I know it was over 800 people.
I know the numbers. Yes. It was 898, and it was the
18, okay. I knew it was an 8. Yeah, 898 players, and he has a World Series of Poker bracelet. Now, I mean, that is surreal. Extremely hard to do. What? Okay, so what was it? A 2-day event or 3-day event?
It was a 2-day event. It was every year the World Series begins with a $500 buy-in casino employees event. And in that year, the Caesars told us we could play this event because Poker News was hired by them to do live updates. So they said, go ahead, you guys can play it. And so I did. And yeah, it ended up being two very long days. Ended up winning it for just south of $85,000 and a bracelet, which it was surreal on many levels in that it was a dream come true, an unexpected dream to come true, because I didn't even realize I could play that event until really a week before it. And I just had always thought that I would win a World Series of Poker circuit ring or something smaller and work my way up to a bracelet. Instead, all of a sudden, 2 days into the 2013 World Series of Poker, I win the first bracelet. And it changed my life on so many levels. Personally, it was a dream come true. It was verification, justification to my poker playing days and the sacrifices I made. Dropping out of law school for one, and professionally, it just took me to another level. You know, I was just a poker reporter before that, but after that, I was the poker reporter with a World Series of Poker bracelet. So I think a lot of the players that I would report on respected that, and it definitely just was a kind of a career boost for me, if you will.
Nice. I mean, I look, and I was saying this to you off cameras, I've actually played in the WSOP event, and it is one of the most difficult, grinding things. And the levels were only 1 hour each. And so anybody who's not familiar with the main event is, it's over, I want to say, a 10 or a 15, 13-day span, because they had break it up into day 1A, 1B, 1C, and 1D. And then they combined 1C and 1D. And then they went into day two. And each level, okay, is 2 hours long. That is a long, long time, especially when you're card dead and you can't really do anything. But, you know, so it's just one of those things where, out of curiosity, do you remember how long the levels were?
So when I won it, they've since changed the structure where I do believe now it is an hour levels. But back when I won it, it was more like of a turbo tournament. You started with less chips and you played, I think, 30-minute levels. It might have been actually 20-minute levels back then. I'd have to look. And I think now it's 40. I think that's what it was. I think it used to be 20-minute levels, and then they doubled it to 40-minute levels. I could be mistaken there, but it was definitely more of a turbo back in my day, if you will.
That's crazy. So you've tell us about some of the people that you're actually you've talked to and you've analyzed the game with. I mean, you know, I did read that you were writing at one point for Phil Locke's The Unabomber Poker.
Yeah, that was one of my early starts before I worked for Poker News, and I was just trying to build my way up to put together a resume. I seen that Phil Locke was starting his own online website, as you mentioned, Unabomber Poker, no longer in service, but they were looking for a few people to do some writing for them. And I applied and got a message from Phil himself saying he loved what I was doing and welcomed me on board. And I'm happy to say I've remained friends with him ever since. I'm friends with his longtime girlfriend, Jennifer Tilly, who, of course, you know, is a bracelet winner herself, but also a very accomplished actress. And it's so strange because when I started poker, when I worked for interned for Bluff in 2009, I was just a fanboy. I went to the World Series of Poker with just the intention of going, meeting my favorite poker idols. You know, I've got pictures with Doyle and Mike Matisoff from that year. And then I was going to come back to Wisconsin and figure out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. It wasn't even a thought in my head that I could turn it into a long-term viable career. So I was just thinking, all right, I'm going to go out there. I didn't have any money at the time, really, and just live it up. And then I'll come back and figure out what I'm going to do with my life. Because you got to remember, I dropped out of law school in 2008. And here we are, 6-7 months later, I get to go to the World Series. And it was just a very a time in my life where I didn't know what was going on. And so to think back to that WSOP in that summer, to where I am now, 13 years later, you know, having positioned myself into, you know, I like to thank one of the higher ranking poker media folks. I certainly have, you know, the longevity in that department. And I've developed relationships with almost every single poker player in the world. I've interviewed most, if not all of them. I literally checked one off the box 2 days ago. Jack Binion called me. Poker Hall of Famer, you know, Jack Binion helped start the World Series of Poker, the son of Benny Binion. Just in the casino and poker industry, they don't get any bigger than that. And I'd seen him at poker events before, but I'd never spoken to him, never had that opportunity. And then, like I said, got a phone call from him about a story we might be working on. And so that was just a fanboy surreal moment for me. But, you know, to think now that, like Daniel Negreanu, I'll never forget the first time Daniel Negreanu called me by my name. It was, you know, it was just surreal. I know I've used that word quite a bit, but now I would dare to say he's a friend, or we're at least, you know, on very friendly terms. Somebody I see quite often and communicate with quite often. And so it's been an adventure. It's been fun. It's been a ride. And, you know, winning a bracelet, the opportunities that Poker News has afforded me, for many years, I got to travel the world to Australia, South America, Europe, Asia, and get paid to do it to cover poker tournaments. I mean, how great is that? That's just, it's still insane to me. And, you know, it's changed my life forever. Even if it all disappeared, tomorrow, it's given me a lifetime of memories and experiences and now, you know, friends and colleagues. So.
You are as close as a touchstone for me because, truth be told, I've been playing poker for, I'm 46 and, you know, so I got my start right around Rounders as well. And like, I've been playing for about 20 years. And so, I mean, my biggest to date, you know, going to play in a World Series of Poker event was a great, you know, and watching the, you know, being there, seeing the bracelet awarded was amazing, and seeing this and taking, and so the fact that you're actually you know, a stone's throw, and you consider all of these people who are really personalities. Let's face it, because, I mean, yes, Daniel's on Twitter and all these, but, you know, it's one of those things, it's like celebrity. And so, I mean, Phil Helm, everybody sees Phil Hellmuth on camera, and it's like, so I got to ask the question, is the whole thing a gig? I'm kidding.
Well, I'll tell you because this is true. So no, it's not. That is 100% Phil. When he's playing poker, what you see is what he's really like when he's in competition mode. Off the felt, away from the table, he's nothing like that. He's one of the most, you know, generous, philanthropic guys you'll ever meet. He just, whatever it is about poker, that competitive juice that flows in him, you know, drives him wild every once in a while. But it's definitely not an act, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Well, I think the thing is, and I think some people would say, oh, well, it's bad for the game. You know, and I understand that because you're looking to be professional. And, I mean, there has to be an etiquette to it and everything else. And when you see blowups like this, it's like, and then when you get, you know, these players, and there are, let's face it, there have been players in the last couple of years that have been, whether they're annoying or just not. And so they'll get penalties and they'll say, well, Phil can do it. And it's almost like he gives them a pass type of thing. But, you know, hearing that kind of story, I mean, and he's put out books and everything else, but hearing that, I think people will say, you know what, maybe I might give him a second chance. So I got to ask, who's the one player or players that you would love to play with but haven't?
Well, that is a good question. I have had the opportunity to play with many in different venues. You know, I did do Poker Night in America, a televised cash game where I got to play with some of the bigger names. And then in World Series poker events, I've managed to cross paths with a few of them. I know Negreanu knocked me out of one tournament, I recall. So if I had to say who would I like to play with, I think it would probably be either Doyle Brunson or Phil Ivey. You know, two of the biggest names. I've watched them play. You know, one of the benefits of doing what I do is I get a front row seat to watch the best in the world play. But I've never actually had the opportunity to sit down and play against them. And I think that would be a treat.
So let's fast forward. So from the Unabomber, you go to Poker Pro Media. So how did that come into play? Or how did you get that gig?
That was one of those where, again, I was just trying to build a resume and realized I needed to put in my dues, if you will. I was willing to take low-paying gigs, to take no-paying gigs, just so I could build a resume and have experience. And that was one where I reached out to them and said, I have this niche that I'm passionate about that I would like to write about, and I would just contribute articles if you're interested. And that niche at the time, and this was in 2008, 9, 10 timeframe, was fantasy poker, like fantasy sports, fantasy football, fantasy baseball, but fantasy poker, a niche that has since grown, but back then was very much in its infancy. And they liked the concept. And so I managed to, you know, start contributing articles to that publication, which was another good career boost for me, you know, just being able to say you write for a poker magazine. And so, you know, that's another one of those opportunities that I'm grateful for. And there is something to be said. I know print media is a dying art form, but I can tell you from experience, having written for magazines, having written for online, that while online stuff pays the bills, there's still more prestige with a printed version. People like to be able to hold something physical in a magazine and read it. They can dig it out of a drawer. I still have all those magazines somewhere as well. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, even when I'll go to a casino every now and then, and, you know, you're waiting for a table to open up, and instead of being on your phone, you're reading a magazine, you know, one of the free magazines that they have, talking about, you know, all these tournaments coming up at all these different casinos and, you know, guaranteed this and that. And there's some insightful articles. And it's like, yeah, you learn things from that rather than actually being on your phone or doing whatever. So from there, you go to the Mid-States Poker Tour.
Well, actually,
you're a media director.
Yeah, that wasn't actually from there. So in 2010, I worked for Poker News and was offered a full-time position with them, which I did through 2016. So from 2010 to 2016, I was with Poker News full-time. really traveling the world, as I mentioned, a lot of international stops, and then just got to, a little tired of all the traveling, being on the road more than half the year, every year. And the opportunity came to work with the MSPT, the Mid-States Poker Tour, which is based in the Midwest where I'm from. It's based out of Minnesota, right next door to Wisconsin. I had played in many of these events, really liked the business, and decided, you know what, this gets me off the road. I'm getting older. I can maybe settle down, figure out life a little bit more. And so took that job, which I did from 2016, 17, and 18 for 3 years. Before going back to Poker News, they reached out to me, said, hey, we're looking for somebody who really specializes in the U.S. market. You're that guy. Would you consider coming back? And, at this time, I was kind of ready to return to the big stage, if you will, and I came back on board with Poker News and have been here ever since.
That's awesome. So what do you think? I mean, I know we were talking about the moneymaker effect earlier. So what do you think really the two things, or maybe a couple of things, that has blown up the game of poker to the status it is today? I mean, you can actually go turn on your television today, and it doesn't matter if it's the WSOP or, whatever it is, you can, Poker Night in America, you can find poker 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's great for somebody like me who loves the game. But what do you think actually got it to that status?
Well, it was the combination of everything that came together to make the explosive mixture that was the poker boom, if you will. Now, we talked about Moneymaker, and that was certainly a big part of that, but it wasn't the only part. It was just this combination of things that came together at the right moment in time. And Moneymaker and his story winning one was certainly a big part of that. But so was the NHL strike that year, which meant ESPN needed to fill content. Hence, they ordered more World Series of Poker episodes. Had that not happened, maybe that exposure isn't there. At the same time, you have the World Poker Tour coming on and the Travel Channel, introducing us to, as I said, David Devilfish Elliott and these other characters. And once that combination hit, which was set up by Rounders coming out 5 years earlier, the introduction of the whole card cam, which was obviously very huge, that started over in the UK with late night poker and found its way to the 2003 World Series of Poker. So now instead of just spectating, you know what they have. So it puts you more in the driver's seat. You're getting a feel. And I think that exposure to viewers was absolutely critical. And then once people fell so hard, you had the boom. As you said, the fields just doubled. You've seen all these TV shows come out, Celebrity Poker Showdown, the Poker Stars Invitational, the NBC Heads Up Championship. You've seen celebrities getting involved in the game. Movies were coming out, aside from Rounders, about poker. Lucky You and Deal, and there was an ESPN scripted television show one season before it was canceled, but called Tilt. So you had all, and so you just had this perfect recipe, and it was growing until 2006 when legislation was snuck in through the middle of the night, the UIGEA, and really decimated online poker in the U.S. So that was, online poker was definitely the foundation of everything we just talked about, because they were the ones who were spending money, who were producing these TV shows, who were qualifying players to the World Series of Poker and the World Poker Tour. And once they weren't able to operate in the same manner, they really had to pull back. And that's what ended the poker boom. Now, we still got the benefits of it. The game went from very small to a massive balloon. The game, the tide just receded a bit. So it was still bigger than it was. It just wasn't as big as it had been, nor probably could have been. Now, it's interesting because here we are, almost 20 years removed from Moneymaker's win. Next year will be the 20th anniversary. And I'm seeing the poker boom is long over. The game kind of stagnated for a while, in my opinion, but now I'm seeing growth again, and that's exciting. But what's strange to me is, if you ask around, you ask guys our age, 40, you said you're mid-40s, guys in their 30s, 50s, they learned the game, they discovered the game because of Rounders or the Moneymaker boom. But when you talk to people who are in their 20s, which I did a lot of this summer, like, where are you learning the game from? And it's these new means that they're learning poker, which I find very interesting. For example, watching vlogs, watching people on TikTok and Instagram. Dan Bilzerian, as checkered as he is and controversial as he is, I've met many young men who were introduced to poker, fell in love with poker because they seen Dan Bilzerian was involved with the game. And so as an old timer, an old schooler like myself, with the moneymaker boom, I find it fascinating to learn how people are still getting into the game. And then also, just as an aside, look at what happened with chess recently when The Queen's Gambit, the TV show that hit on Netflix, the Netflix show, it sparked a whole new interest in the game of chess, and they experienced a boom themselves. And I'm confident that at some point in time, I believe all things are cyclical, and I think that at some point in time, poker will experience another boom. It'll take something to ignite it. It could be, we often talk of maybe a female winning the World Series of Poker main event would certainly help. But I think it will be something like a Queen's Gambit type of movie or scripted television show that really draws interest in it. And there are characters in poker, real life characters like Stu Unger, who have lived such a life that it would make for compelling television. They're making a movie about Doyle Brunson's life that will come out in the three, 4 or 5 years. I don't know how long it would take them to make the movie, but I know it is happening. And so that kind of stuff gets me pretty excited about the growth and future of poker as well.
That I can't wait for. That is one I will definitely be keeping my eyes out for.
Here's the question. Who do you think should play Doyle Brunson? What actor can pull it off?
And that's the thing. I'll tell you what, though. It depends on what age they're going to start it at, right? I mean, if they're going to start him in his mid-20s, he's been playing for, 55 years? 60 years?
Yeah, probably more. Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be 89 this year, and he's probably been playing since he was 18. So you're looking at maybe 70 years.
Yeah, okay. So it's going to really depend on – it's going to have to, I think, be a multitude of actors.
Right.
Otherwise, at some point, makeup's just not going to take care of that. But, I think you're going to have somebody do maybe, an 18 to 34 – I think you're going to have somebody who's a 35 to 59. And then I think you're going to have an older actor.
I'll tell you who I think the older actor, I think, and I think Doyle would be very pleased with this casting if it were to happen, because he starred in Doyle's favorite all-time Western movie, Hell or High Water, and that's Jeff Bridges. I think Jeff Bridges is an incredible actor.
He won an Oscar for True Grit. So, I really hope what I really hope is they kind of fast forward it and be like, okay, we want all your input now. We want all your stories now, get as much, because everybody knows with Super System is great and everything else. That's about the game. We want the personal stuff though. The stuff that, guns being drawn at tables, I'm kidding, but it's like, that's what it was back in the day. And it's like the first World Series of Poker or those thereabout were 12 or 14 people. It wasn't a lot of people. So if you ever get a chance and you're in Las Vegas, go to Binion's. I'm telling you, I won't say a tiny poker room. I've been there several times, but the pictures, the history. I actually have a picture of myself with $1 million.
Yep.
And and it's a tourist attraction thing, but it's $1 million. Put it in perspective like this: the winner of this World Series of main event, it's tenfold. That's how much money it is. But, it's one of those things where I think poker is one of those things that there's so many different elements to it. And there's so many different ways to play. You can play by the numbers if you're younger, more aggressive. We're seeing more 3 and 4 bets pre-flop now, than you ever did even 10, 15 years ago. To somebody that's more, okay, I'm going to be able to, pull it back and be passive aggressive. Personally speaking, I always say that, you have to be able to play every single hand, every single way, whether it's pocket aces and be passive, passive with it, or 4-bet it, and whatever else, depending on what the table. Obviously, there's a lot of variables going into all of this stuff. But, and the one thing, so speaking on that, we were talking off camera. So rounders two, Do you think Rounders 2 will ever get made?
It is the lingering question, right, in the poker world. There's so many hopefuls. There's been so many false starts, if you will, over the years.
To one-up that, Chad, do you think if it gets made, do you think that could be another boom?
To answer your question, yes, I do think it will get made. And if it's done right, then yes, it could be another contribution to increase in growth. I don't know if it would boom per se, but it certainly could help. And I heard rumblings in the poker industry that there are some very powerful figures, if you will, within the poker industry who want to see it made. And so maybe willing to help fund it or push it in that direction. And that it could be a very real possibility. And we know from over the years, from interviews that, Edward Norton has done, that he's been on board wanting to do a sequel, that the screenwriters, Brian Koppelman and David Levien, who are now writing the great Showtime show Billions, by the way, but they're interested in doing a sequel as well. And so I think the people are there that are wanting to do it. It's just a matter of maybe scheduling and finances, but I do think it will happen. What it will be is anybody's guess as far as storyline goes. I just hope it's done right because we in the poker world can be pretty picky if they get details wrong.
This is so true. This is so true. I think every poker fan and poker player out there, including myself because I have one, in a notebook somewhere here, but I think every single person has their own version of Rounders 2. And what they want to see and how they want to see it and, the happy ending and, all of that. But it's one of those things where, and one thing every poker player has, and I know you have probably had many over the course of your career, is bad beats. Give me a couple of the worst bad beat stories you've ever.
I mean, I like to say I can't tell bad beat stories because I've won a World Series of Poker bracelet. Right? Like it's hard to win a bracelet and still try to tell bad beats. I'm sure I can come up with a couple. Let me try to, I have been pretty fortunate in, my bigger spots to run pretty well. And I've been always appreciative of that fact.
So quick question. What do you play? I mean, is it 2-5? Is it 5-10?
Yeah. If I play, which is sparingly these days just because of my work schedule, now that I've relocated from Wisconsin to Vegas, I'm looking forward to having more opportunities to play. When it comes to cash games, I prefer to play pot limit Omaha. Usually, 1-3, 2-5, even 5-10, depending on the game. I do play no limit hold'em cash games on occasion. Usually, 2-5, 1-3. Occasionally, I have played in the 5-10 or bigger, just depending on the opportunities. But primarily tournaments. I am a tournament player. I enjoy them more. I do like the competition and the prestige that comes with winning a tournament, and that feeling. It's hard to describe, but going deep in a tournament and winning one is a special feeling.
Well, that actually is a good lead in. So when you won all those years ago, can you tell me the first thing that is running through your mind? Like, oh my God, I just won a World Series of Poker bracelet. Oh my God, I actually did this. Oh my God, my life's been changed.
It was a very, again, I use the word surreal moment. I remember when you get in what they call flow, when you're just in the zone, everything else melts away. And that's where I was at. I remember this wasn't a bad beat, in the long run, but at the time it seemed like it was heads up for the bracelet. And I had my opponent outchipped 2-1. So I had a good lead. I felt like I had momentum. And we got it all in on a flop where he had king 7 and I had 6-4 and the flop was 4-5-7. So he flopped top pair. I flopped bottom pair, but with an open-ended straight draw to boot. So we get all the chips in and the turn is a 6. And so I end up making 2-pair to take the lead. And I have now the straight draw, I think, is out the door because we would chop it with the straight, but now I just have to hold, right? And the river was a 5. And so I got counterfeited. I had 2 pairs, 6s, and 4s. He made 2 pairs, 7s, and 5s. and my supporters didn't realize what happened. I did. And so they rushed the stage like I had just won, when in fact,
no.
Yeah, it was brutal. And he, he doubled into a 2-1 chip lead. And I'll never forget feeling, you know, that tilt, that frustration. And I was just sitting there, and he's got the momentum now. He's feeling good. And I just felt these emotions start to take over. And I remember they had put the bracelet on the table, and I was looking at it, shuffling my chips as the dealer was dealing. And I just thought, Chad, I said, yeah, that sucks, but that's poker. If you go on tilt right now, you're going to lose. And do you really want to be the person who said you were one card away from winning a World Series of Poker bracelet? No? Then buckle up and get the job done. And that kind of settled my mind. And fortunately, I was able to, you know, claw back into the chip lead and ultimately close it out. And, I'm forever grateful for that, because I have had the privilege of living with winning a World Series of Poker bracelet. I can't imagine the feeling of what it would be like to live with having to finish runner-up, coming that one spot short. And there's always somebody. For every winner of a bracelet that's been out there, there's been somebody who's taken second place. So I'm just thankful that I was in that moment, and the poker god smiled upon me. So.
Yeah, and I remember when I watched the bracelet being awarded a couple of years ago, and I, you know, there was a couple of hands going back and forth, and I went, wow. And it was, the word I use was drama, because it really was. You didn't know who was going to win. I mean, somebody was a 2-1 chip lead, and then somebody won with a set, and I'm just like, oh my God, they got, you know, it's neck and neck. And then I'm just like, oh my God, you can't script this.
And then to answer your question too, how I felt after I won was just shock. It really was pure shock, because when we came back from day two, out of the 898 that started, we came back to day two with 53 players. I think I bagged the third largest stack, but even still, with 53 players, that's a long ways to go. You don't think this is really going to happen, but 14 hours later or whatever it was, all of a sudden I'm the last player standing. And so I just didn't have the time to process it, really, to get excited about it. And so when it happened, it was just this shock. I didn't have time to, call my friends and family and let them know, hey, I'm at the final table, and hey, here's what's going on. We only got 15-minute breaks every two levels. So.
And this is before social media, true, isn't it? True?
The social media was out there.
I mean, the social media just started, but it's not like – get on Twitter and be like, it's not like people, they get on their phones and say, okay, this is what I have left, or this is what,
Right.
So this is before all of that.
And when I won, it was really late in the evening, about 3 a.m. Vegas time. And my dad gets up to work, I knew, at 4 a.m. Wisconsin time. So I knew he was going to be up for work and driving. And so he was the first person I called, and just kind of said, I did it. And some tears were shed, and, I went back to where I was staying with some friends just to have a couple drinks and try to come down from this unbelievable high. And then the next day, after I managed to get a little bit of sleep, I actually had to work. The next day was my first day at Poker News. And, I did go into work. Fortunately, they understood that I wasn't going to be focused on, live reporting tournaments, because I couldn't walk down the halls without people saying congratulations and this and that and wanting to do interviews and what have you. So they were very kind to that. But that day after was just, getting congratulations from friends, colleagues, even big name poker pros was quite awesome. And then people from around the world that I have met, friends back home in Wisconsin who don't really know poker but hear about this, reaching out. And so that was really cool. It was, I still chase the tournament scene because I want that feeling again. It's unbelievable. When it happens, and it happens so rarely, it might not ever happen to me again. It's only happened to Phil Hellmuth 16 times, and he's played how many events. So it's very rare to win a bracelet, but I'm certainly going to keep trying.
So is there, so for everybody listening, so there's obviously a difference between a cash game or a ring, as is known as a ring game. So you can stay in as long as you have chips and as long as you have money on the table, to a tournament where once you're, it's basically, a lot of them are what's known as freeze outs. So once you lose your chips, you're done. So let me ask you this. Is there, it doesn't matter whether it's the World Series, the main event, or a turbo. Is there one thing that, a piece of strategy that if I don't know, if I'm your average layman poker player that I'm playing, is there one thing that you could tell me today that would say, okay, you need to double up in the first three levels, let's say, before Andy start? Or do you know what I'm saying?
Sure, sure. I think a general piece of wisdom that I would give anybody when it comes to poker, in poker tournaments at least, would be timing and aggression. And by that I mean timing is something you always need to be aware of. You can't win a poker tournament in the first few levels. In many tournaments, you can't win it in the first day. You have to get to the end. So it's a matter of pacing yourself and finding spots and paying attention to timing. And then when those spots arise, you have to be aggressive. Because if you're playing scared, if your opponents pick up that you can be pushed around or that you're not willing to take a gamble when everything is in your favor, you know, if you have an opportunity where you're an 80% favorite and your opponent only has 20% in poker, that's fantastic. You better be willing to get all your chips in a situation like that. Sure, one in five times, that person's going to win. You're going to lose, and that sucks. But it's all about timing and realizing, you know, it's like a, kind of liken it to the stock market. When's a good time to buy? When's a good time to sell? When's a good time to just sit tight? Poker tournaments are very similar. And I like tournaments in that it's more of a level playing field, in my opinion. As you said, it's a freeze out. You buy in for $500, I buy in for $500, nothing else matters. Whereas in a cash game, you sit down, you're playing against somebody's bankroll, perhaps. If you're a millionaire and I'm playing with my last $300, that makes a big difference. I'm guessing I'm going to play a little more scared and tight, whereas you might just put in $300 blind to have some fun. And so I find in cash games, there are a lot more dynamics to deal with, whereas in tournaments, as I said, it is a much more level playing field. But as you mentioned too, there are differences between cash game poker and tournament poker. Yes, the general gist is there as far as hand rankings and how the game is actually operated. But when it comes to strategies, two very different things.
I know that, we see online poker today, and there have been some really, really, really successful people. Tom Tuan being the number one person I can think of off the top of my head, who just made, he was unbelievable online, and then he just came in and just, he kills the cash game. Do you think that online poker is, I won't say hurting cash games, but do you think online players don't really have an understanding what cash games are all about and vice versa? Whereas a cash game player can just, I mean, we're on a computer right now, I'm looking at you, and do you understand? So it's like, how does an online player translate then to a cash game? Or can they translate?
Yeah, I think online poker is an interesting thing in that it allowed players, and it really sped up the evolution of the game of poker because of the sheer number of hands. You know, if you sit down to play poker live in a 30-minute period, if you get 10 to 15 hands played in that 30-minute window, that's pretty good because it takes time to shuffle the cards, to distribute them, for the action to actually play out, then repeat the process. Whereas online, it's instantaneous. As soon as a hand is over, the next cards are already being dealt out. And it's just much quicker. So what you had is online players got volume in. You had players who were able to play more hands in their lifetime in two or three years than Doyle Brunson had in his 50, 60, 70 years of playing live poker. And with that comes experience. They get to experience more situations, different hands, different scenarios. And so you're just seeing an increase in the speed of poker, both in execution and evolution. And online players crushed a lot for that reason. They got very good, very fast. Now, those skills, though, yes, you can take the what they've learned and bring it over to the live realm. And oftentimes they will have success, but oftentimes they have to contend with the slower pace of the game, which they're not used to. They have to contend with somebody who has decades of experience looking at you across the table and reading you and seeing how uncomfortable you are. Do you give off any tells? Because when you're playing online, you're protected. You're hidden behind a screen. And so there are definitely people who have struggled, and while tournaments and cash games differ, so do live poker and online poker. I'm primarily a live poker player. I do dabble online from occasion, but not very often. And I think it's vice versa too. A lot of people who specialize on online poker, well, they will play live, often don't, because they're more comfortable playing online.
So let me ask you, so where would you like to see Poker News go in the future? Like, is there something that you personally, like a pet project that you'd like to bring to fruition, or new elements that you'd like to introduce and have?
I think with Poker News, I think with Poker News for me is just to continue doing what we're doing. We've been around for a long time. I think 2007 was the first World Series of Poker that Poker News ended up covering. And we're known for our live updates. So we go to poker events all around the world. Right now, for instance, there's a tournament taking place, the UK IPT in Nottingham over there in England. And so we have somebody there who is doing live updates, watching the action and reporting it in a live blog so people can go and read and know what's going on. You know, they can see chip counts, hands, how many players. And so just being the industry leader there, I'd like to see us continue to crush that. And also the news stories. I want it to be the one-stop shop for all things poker news. You know, when you want to read an interview, when you want to listen to a poker podcast, when you want to see pictures of your friends and family, when you need a welcome bonus and you want to learn about online poker sites or even a live card room, you know, be that one-stop shop. And I think in a lot of regards, we are, that it's hard to beat what it is that Poker News does. There certainly are other poker media outlets out there, but I think very few of them have as big of a reach as we do, because we really do have people all over the world.
And it's just amazing to see how much the game has grown over the last 15 or 20 years. And it's just like, you know, I still remember, I mean, I always go, I'm a big proponent of Rounders, and I love that movie, hands down. And like, even that scene when Mike's sitting on the couch watching that VHS tape of Johnny Chan and Phil Hellmuth. And it's just like, wow. And it's amazing to see where it was. And then you see, you know, the winner that was just crowned a couple weeks ago, $10 million.
$10 million, and coming off what was the second largest ever WSOP main event. The largest took place in 2006 before the aforementioned UGIEA. So I was mentioning poker was on this trajectory to grow. And in 2006, it had an all-time high. But this year was like 100 people less. It was right there knocking on the door. Which is quite unbelievable. So we are experiencing growth again in poker. It was the largest World Series of Poker ever in terms of overall attendance in the side events and what have you. And so I think next year will be the biggest ever. It's got a new home on the Las Vegas Strip at Bally's in Paris. Players are excited. Poker is growing. It is booming a little bit right now, just not on the scale nor the exposure as in years past. You know, you're not seeing as many mainstream poker things, but within the industry itself, it's a very exciting time for the game.
That's awesome. So I think the one that I saw at the Rio was probably the last one that it's was actually at the Rio for the, that was probably the last year. So that was, that's been great. That was great. But yeah,
the Rio was a great home.
Yes, it really was.
I've calculated based upon my work hours, I've spent about a year to a year and a half of my life inside the walls of the Rio All Suite Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. So it was.
They haven't given you residency there yet?
They should have. So I was very happy when they moved to a new location. It was a welcome change for me.
So I got to ask real quick before we go, like, what, you're in Vegas now. What is your, like, your favorite, or do you have a favorite casino?
I do. It depends, again, am I going to play cash games? Am I going to play tournaments? But I have become very fond of the Wynn and the Venetian, especially for tournament play. They both do do excellent jobs. They have a great selection of tournaments almost year-round, so I do anticipate grinding there quite a bit. And then for cash games, I know the games over there at Aria have been pretty good, so I'm certainly will go play there. I know at Golden Nugget, they have a very juicy 1-3 no-limit hold'em cash game that has a no max, but there's no max buy-in. So you can sit down and action on Fremont Street. It's the only poker room left on Fremont Street, unfortunately. Binion's did close their poker room during COVID and has not reopened.
Is it back open? Because that's too bad. No, because I stay at the Plaza all the time. I'll stay at the Plaza for the rates and right. walk across the street to Golden Nugget. I'll play 2-4 limit there just to, you know, dabble. And right. if I want to play, like, I'll play 1-3, you know, at the Nugget too. Yeah. Because I didn't even know they had a 1-3.
Yep, they do. It's, you know, the Nugget is the oldest poker room now in Las Vegas. So it's got a long history. We did the Poker News Cup with them this past summer, which was a great success. And so I'm a big fan of the Golden Nugget and like to go play there and feel the ambiance. And I, like you said, I always walk over to Binion's, even though they don't have a poker room anymore. You still get the feel and the aura and knowing that this is where the World Series of Poker started and where it played out for since 1970 all the way up through 2004. Just an incredible amount of poker history within those walls, and I always love being in it.
Quick story about Binion's before we go. I was actually playing this is when it was open, and so I had I think I had 5-7, and so I was like, when I first saw this happen, I went, oh my god, this has to be straight out of Rounders. And it's so, for everybody that knows the scene I'm going to talk about, he flops a straight, and I flopped the straight. And so, long story short, I get all my chips in the middle, and there was somebody else that got, there were two other people that went all in. And I basically knew one of them was on a flush draw, and the other one was on a full house draw. And so I ended up raking it. I ended up winning the hand with the nut straight. I ended up winning like $300. And that was at a 1-3 game. But it was just one of those things where it's a magical moment. You're like, oh my god, this is right out of Rounders. And that was the first thing I thought of. Like, you know, that's it. Was just like, that's crazy. But yeah, it's just, the game is just one of those things. It's worldwide. It's amazing. And it's my only love. Like, I love, there's nothing else. I can go to Vegas anytime, and it's like, you know, play. And it's just like, it's like riding a bicycle. That's what it is, Chad. It's like riding a bicycle, and you just get back on and do it over and over. And you fall down sometimes, but to get back up. And when you get back up and you have those moments, those are the ones you remember. But in all honesty, this has been an absolute blast. I'm honored and privileged, and like I said, I was like a fanboy even getting to know that I could do this. And it's one of those things where, you know, and I know I was saying to you earlier, like, this is the closest I've been to, like, pro. Because I tried playing pro one many years. I said, oh, I'm going to quit my job and go. That was a joke. But, you know, it's just like to hear somebody and their stories, and they've climbed a mountain and gotten to the top of Mount Everest. And not only have they gotten to the top of Mount Everest, but have stayed there and then branched out. And, you know, some of the names you were dropping, like Phil Hellmuth, Phil Ivey, Doyle Brunson, Jennifer Tilly, Phil Locke. I mean, these are, you know, players that are still going in today's game. And I mean, they're Poker Hall of Famers, so what they are. And it's just like, you know, I mean, you living the life, and I know you were using the word surreal many times, and it's like, yeah. I mean, you have a surreal life. Every single poker player wants to be in Chad Holloway's shoes. Guarantee it. Because it's like, they want to know what it's like. And so let me ask you this. Have you ever thought about writing a book?
I do hope to write many books in my lifetime, and hopefully sooner than later. It's just a matter of finding the time. But I do like the idea of writing something longer form. Both, I would love to, you know, do a book about my personal experiences in the poker industry and a lot of the adventures that I've had. But I'd also be very interested in writing maybe a poker biography on a poker pro who, you know, I feel deserves it and might not be inclined to write it themselves. I think it would be fun. You know, Nolan Dalla and Peter Olson's book, One of a Kind, about Stu Unger, is a classic. And so that was very inspiring. And, I, you know, something like, yeah, I'd like to do that one day.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this has been an absolute blast, as I said. I've been sitting here with one of the best in the business for the last 15 or 20 years, World Series of Poker Bracelet winner, Chad Holloway. And for him, I'm David Steele, and you have been listening to Real Talks.